This is the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in today. Geraldine Lucas is a journalist and television producer who is currently director of corporate communications and public affairs at Lifetime Television. She's a wife and mother. She's also the author of Why I Wore Lipstick to My Mastectomy, which was made into a Lifetime original movie. When Geraldine Lucas was 27, in a great job, married for just 2 years to her husband, she was diagnosed with breast cancer. Now, you might wonder about this lipstick thing. At once, it's something frivolous, yet it makes a statement. It certainly does. Remember hearing about the women of Sarajevo dressing and wearing makeup while their city was under siege? Likewise, applying lipstick is, for Geraldine Lucas, an act of courage. Geraldine Lucas is my guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. Geraldine, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Hi, Celeste. It's great to be here.
Would you tell us the story that opens the book, Why I Wore Lipstick to My Mastectomy, of the moment you first opened yourself up to a tube of red lipstick?
Sure. Well, my book actually starts with something called the Lipstick Manifesto, and it's really for all women. It's not really just about that moment of when I put on my lipstick when I was wearing my surgical gown the morning of my mastectomy, but it's really this idea why I never felt courageous enough or worthy enough to wear a red lipstick. I was always a gloss girl, if at best. And I just would always look at all these other women with envy in the restroom when they were putting on their lipstick, and every stroke seemed to say, notice me, and I deserve this. And I never felt like I could pull it off. And it was sort of ironic that morning when everything was being taken away from me that I decided to try.
Mm. A revelatory moment for you.
It really was. And I like how you used the word frivolous in the introduction, because I think that's exactly what I thought lipstick was. I also thought it was glamour, and it felt so far away from the scalpel and this really just antiseptic room that I found myself in, and it was so anonymous. I remember looking down and seeing the hospital gown said property in Mount Sinai Hospital, and I felt I too had become property in the hospital, of the hospital, in that very strange kind of moment. So I think the lipstick was also just maybe a hope or a prayer that I would get to wear it again on my own terms. It's amazing all the places I have worn it since that morning.
Yeah. Now, what kind of reaction did you get from people in the hospital when you...
Oh, I think they thought I was a freak. I mean, They just basically, you know, you have to imagine when my surgeon looked over at me and I was intubated and I had the breathing tube down my throat and these perfectly lined red lips. I remember when they woke me up in recovery and the nurse was screaming at me to breathe and she was going to have to connect me to a respirator. And suddenly she just stopped and said, what kind of lipstick are you wearing? Because I want some. And she said it lasted 6 hours and what brand? So there was a small kind of, you know, it went through the recovery room pretty quickly.
Yeah, there's something graceful about those moments. You know?
Oh, I love that. Yeah, it was a small victory. My lipstick had lasted, and I just felt like I appeared. It was a really strange feeling.
Yeah. You use humor to great effect. So tell us how humor has helped you through all of this.
I think that, you know, there is such a thin line between comedy and tragedy, and I just think there are so many moments when, I mean, there's so much pain and there's so many tears when there's just so much absurdity too. And just to be able to laugh about it, I think really was so freeing. And it just reminded me of my old self in a way. And it took me out of that dire moment. There's a moment in the book when I'm with my mom. We're at the plastic surgeon. She's talking to us about the breast reconstruction, and she's telling us that she makes these amazing nipples, and she says they're pointillistic, they're Seurat, they're Monet, and I like can't believe it. I'm looking at my mom like, am I hallucinating? And she just goes on to say that, you know, true nipples don't have only one color, there are many colors, and her tattoo, this nipple reconstruction would really be, you know, something like a Monet. I start thinking of Monet's water lilies, and I think, thank God, I had to take an art history course in college, because I just can't believe this is unfolding. And I decided from that point I wanted a museum-quality nipple, because nothing else would substitute.
How long has it been now since that diagnosis back when you were 27?
It's been 13 years, and it's really kind of incredible to me that my life really has gone on. I think when I was first diagnosed, I really wanted to read a book about someone who went through this and who came out the other end, and I'm just so happy that I think I can offer women that glimpse into the future that I so desperately wanted. And I've had two children. I wore lipstick to my C-section for both of them in the same hospital where I had my mastectomy. So that's been really amazing to me. And I got to wear lipstick to the Emmys, which was awesome. We were nominated for the movie version of lipstick. And it's been pretty amazing. I was in Tokyo last year. The book was translated into Japanese, and it was so moving to meet many women who've never told anyone they had breast cancer there. Mm. There's just a really different approach to disease and illness, and it was very moving to share so much with these women. We didn't speak the same language at all, but I knew we had a lot in common.
Yeah, that's interesting, the business about talking about something that's so huge. But that's another one of the ways that you dealt with your fear, was to talk. And your family, your friends, your coworkers, that all that support was really important.
It really was. I mean, I think writing the book, it was sort of a talking cure. And I go through this thing that happens, I call it cancer confessing. At first, I don't want to tell anyone, and I'm so ashamed and embarrassed, and then I can't stop telling people. I tell my doorman and the deli guy and just everyone. And I think that the more I talked about it, the more I realized that different people offered me so much. It was just amazing how much strength I really drew from others. And I mean, it was incredible, and it's so nice now when I get to meet people and they say thank you for your courage or your story. But again, I get so much strength from them. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, maybe you would tell us the story of the taxi driver who took very good care of you following your first chemo.
Oh my gosh, wasn't that amazing? I know, it's like I just found myself blurting sometimes when, you know, I got into this cab. I was so sick. I remember he just had this really, really loud kind of, you know, I'm thinking AC/DC. It was just very loud music, and he looked really tough. And I remember I got in, and he just was kind of hitting the brakes. And I just, you know, said to him, I'm so sorry. I just had my first chemo. I'm so scared. If you hit the brakes that hard, I might, you know, vomit in your back seat. And next thing I know, there's classical music playing, and he put down all the windows, and he's driving like 2 miles an hour. And he said, oh, my wife had ovarian cancer. She's fine, but the chemo nearly killed her. So he just drove me to my door, kissed my hand, and charged me a fare. I mean, it was amazing. It was just such a wonderful way to get home, to meet this stranger and feel taken care of in this big city. And there are a lot of moments like that in the book. I guess they're serendipitous. I don't know. Just when someone appears, something happens where, for instance, my boss at the time, I remember not wanting to tell her. She was so perfect, and I was so scared that my job would be in jeopardy. And she was a breast cancer survivor. She had it when she was in her early 30s. So a lot of little stories like that, when I took that risk, how I was rewarded.
Mm. You decided to go with a mastectomy rather than a lumpectomy. And as you were making that decision, you had the future very much in mind. And you say you thought maybe there'd be a revelation of a different beauty underneath the surface. And so here now I'd like you to talk about the idea of inner cleavage and how that came to you.
Well, it's very ironic when I finished the whole thing. I mean, when I, you know, lost my breast and I lost my hair and I kind of come out the other side. At the end of my story, I take this topless photo, and it's really to inspire other young women and other women that they can have mastectomies and that they can, you know, be okay afterwards. And I felt like I was sort of a fraud when I went in for the picture because I hadn't really convinced myself. And no one told me the photographer took life-size images, Polaroids. And she's rather well-known. Her name is Mary Ellen Mark, and she just does these dramatic black and white Polaroids life-size. And it was amazing. When she hung up my photo, it was like a billboard, and she was on a ladder, like waiting for it to develop. I remember just saying to her, please, just, you know, I can't go forward with this. Let's destroy it. I'll pay you for this. We can put it on my credit card. I don't want anyone to see this. Mm-hmm. I'm such a fraud. And she was like, why? You have to look at yourself. And, you know, I had imagined that my scar would be like 3 feet wide, blown up, and I never really looked head on at it. And I was so scared to see myself, and the first thing that I saw were my eyes, and I really didn't recognize myself, and it was really the first time I ever felt beautiful in an image, but I really felt unrecognizable. It was so strange that here was the largest defect, and here was the first time I felt so beautiful, and I think something appeared, this inner cleavage, this reveal in this photo I'd never seen before. I'd never really seen myself. I hadn't looked at the journey and the courage and just the whole picture. And I think as women, you know, we oftentimes go to the defect first, or we say, this is wrong, that's wrong. And there was something so wrong, and something else really overwhelmed it.
Mm. When you speak publicly about breast cancer, like you did recently in Urbana, what kinds of questions do you get from the audience?
Oh, that's such a good question. I think that a lot of times people want to know about, they're really, really curious to hear what my life is like now. They really want to know, you know, they also want to know, I think they have a lot of questions about what to do. They're in a point of their treatment where they're facing a really hard decision. I think a lot of times when I'm expecting questions, people just share with me. They, you know, it's not really a question. It's just a statement of how hard something was for them, or, you know, they just feel, I think they feel really relieved to have an audience too. So much of the experience is so dehumanizing. It's so lonely. And I think when you get a group like that together, it's kind of magical. I mean, that group was so amazing. Here were all these women. So many had gone through the same experience, but extremely different. I mean, everyone's story is different. But I think they felt really safe. And it was just amazing. A lot of times people want to know about having children afterwards, and what did my doctor say? And my doctors were really against it. They really didn't think it was a very safe option. Now we know a little bit more about that. And, you know, a lot of times women ask me to see my tattoo when I'm done speaking. And I, it's so funny. I used to be so modest, but I'm quite an exhibitionist. I'll gladly show anyone my tattoo. And, you know, it's really cool. I've gotten a few emails. Women decide to get a tattoo instead of the museum quality nipple. I got a real tattoo of a heart with wings. And so it's kind of fun. They line up and they want to take a look. And sometimes it becomes a little bit of a show and tell with all the survivors there. So that's fun too.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story in the book and the film, and in your personal speaking appearances, and with us this afternoon here on the program.
Oh, well, thank you. And what a great community you have there. And it was very special when I was introduced. I was introduced by the woman who started the breast center to help other women who sadly passed away, but one of her best friends introduced me, and that was pretty amazing. I think we all had chills that night.
Yeah, that's the Mills Institute. Yeah,
it was incredible. Well, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Geraldine Lucas has been my guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. She's the author of Why I Wore Lipstick to My Mastectomy. The book is published by St. Martin's Griffin.